Late Night Live with Phil Williams on BBC Radio 5 Live.
So for the next half an hour, something the World Health Organization is now recognizing as a disorder.
Topping our stories tonight, the World Health Organization today has listed and defined gaming addiction as a condition warranting further research, citing an increase in the development of treatment programs across the world. More information will be given on this.
The move by the World Health Organization comes amid increasing evidence of young players suffering psychological distress and family breakdown as a result of their addiction.
Playing video games, and you want to stop and don't know how. And you want to stop and don't know how.
Demographics tend to be about 90% male, tend to be kind of 18 to 32, more college-aged young adults who, you know, maybe developed a problem in high school, but they were able to get away with it. Now, as they get to college and have less parent supervision and more responsibilities, more stress, they game to escape.
So we're going to spend some time discussing gaming addiction, defined by the World Health Organization as a pattern of behavior characterized by impaired control over gaming, in which increasing priority is given to gaming over other activities to the extent that gaming takes precedence over other interests and other daily activities. And there is a continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. If you've experienced this in your household, I'd love to know how you approached it and whether it's you were the gamer and you had to back off your console a little bit, or whether you were a family member who had to try and stage an intervention. You can text us tonight on 85058, tweet us at BBC5Live. I'll speak to Cam Adair, first of all. At the height of his addiction, Cam was playing video games for up to 16 hours a day. Hi, Cam. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
How long did that period last for?
It was a couple of years. And
16 hours a day for 2 years?
Yeah, and I was pretending to have jobs and deceiving my family, and you know, eventually I wrote a suicide note. That's where I realized I needed to make a change.
Can you explain how the addiction grabbed hold of you? Was it a slow, gradual process?
It came and went at different periods of my life, but I was bullied really intensely during the eighth grade, and that caused me to want to escape. And gaming was a really effective way to do that. So when I dropped out of high school and now had all this time on my hands, that's where, you know, gaming began to become a bigger problem in my life.
When it got to the stage that you were writing a suicide note, what did you put in that? What were your feelings at that point?
The one thing I can remember writing was to my dad that I knew that gaming was something that really bothered him and he really didn't like a lot. And I didn't want him to blame gaming or to kind of see it as a bad thing, and more it was something that was helping me at the time. And that's what I can remember writing. You know, just these notes to family and friends, letting them know that, you know, I cared for them and I was sorry and that I was going to be in a better place, no longer in so much pain. But thankfully, that night, a friend invited me to go see a movie, and during that movie, I was laughing and smiling and having a great time, and that kind of shook me out of my state. So I came home and asked my dad to help me find a counselor, and he, of course, said yes, and that helped me turn my life around.
So you now set up Game Quitters, haven't you, which is an online support network helping thousands of people in over 90 countries to tackle this. How do you go about providing support to others? What's the first step?
The biggest thing is helping them no longer feel alone, because when we realize that we're not alone, we are able to connect with a lot of other people and find strategies and support and be able to take those positive steps forward. We have a lot of encouragement. So, you know, one of the first things that they need to know how to do is to how do you find new activities? How do you structure your time? How do you deal with cravings and urges to play and withdrawal symptoms? And how do you make new friends? And so on GameQuitters.com, we have 200 different videos for free. We have programs step-by-step exactly how to quit for not only gamers, but also parents as well. And now I travel all over the world speaking about the subject, and I'm coming to the UK actually in March for a big tour.
Were you addicted to one particular game, or were you completing so many games that you were just going through them?
I was more of a competitive player, so I played StarCraft, Counter-Strike 1.6, and World of Warcraft. And World of Warcraft was definitely a game I played where that, you know, was during the most severe period of my life where it was a negative thing. And that kind of grabbed a hold of me because you could play World of Warcraft for 16 hours and, you know, not even really make that much progress. And you always had something else to do. And it was almost like a second life. I actually identified with my character and kind of felt like I knew my character better in the online world than I really knew myself in the real world. And the real world for me was a source of immense pain, whereas online I was someone I was able to see achievement and have other friends and really feel good about myself. And so World of Warcraft was definitely a game where it was a big problem for me.
When you're playing for 16 hours a day, do you even find time for the basics? I mean, did you go to the bathroom at all? Did you eat?
Eating was definitely less of a priority. For me, I've never been someone who, you know, had really poor hygiene to the sense that I wouldn't shower or go to the bathroom, although we definitely hear a lot of cases like that, and there are a lot of gaming addicts who do struggle with that. But my weight was really low. I remember coming home for summer one year, and my mom looked at me horrified because I had been, she didn't know, but I had been gaming and skipping class and not eating, and she looked at me and I had lost a bunch of weight and I was very pale, and you know, that was a big problem. So for me, it was, I was still showering and doing those basics, but that was it. And outside of eating, you know, getting through basics, I wasn't doing anything else.
Alongside Cam is John Logan, because Cam's talking to us live from Thailand tonight. And John Logan is head counselor at The Cabin, which is a residential treatment center in northern Thailand. And what kind of programs do you run there, John?
Well, we treat addiction in general, but we also have a specific gaming program that we recently introduced in response to the demand.
And how long does that last?
It lasts 90 days. We can actually do it in a shorter time, but 90 days is ideal.
Because?
It takes that long to actually... there's two parts of the program. The first is we do a digital detox. That takes about 45 days. And that involves clients not having any access to computers, smartphones, or anything of that nature. And the only thing they can do is to contact their family through a landline.
And sorry, just on that, how did you arrive at 45 days? Was it shorter and you found it wasn't working? Was there scientific evidence that said that's the optimum number of days? How did you get there?
Well, there's scientific evidence regarding addiction in general. You know, the definition that you read out earlier on from the World Health Organization could be actually applied to any addiction if we just change the word gaming to a substance or to another kind of process addiction.
Right.
So it normally takes about 28 days to stabilize an addiction, and it can take anything up to 90 days. But we came on the number of 45 just through experience, actually. We found that it takes that long actually for people to get used to not having a smartphone and not having access to a computer and being away from games. It also involves them being involved in physical activity and having connection with their peers, developing a sense of meaning and purpose. So after about 45 days, one of the problems with gaming is we game on computers, obviously, and like other sorts of process addictions, in the modern world, you must be able to use a computer in order to function. So the second 45 days, the second half of the program, is basically about reintroducing people into having a healthy relationship with technology. Clients need to be able to use computers in order to function either as students or in any kind of work environment. What we do encourage is that they don't, for a period of at least 1 year, that they don't use smartphones, that they would go back to an old-fashioned brick phone.
Well, let's bring in a student on that. Matas Mikas joins us, who is an undergraduate, dividing his time between Glasgow and his native Slovakia. And how bad was it for you, Matas, in your teens? How long were you gaming?
I would usually come back from school at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then if I didn't have any sports, I would just play until I go to bed at like 10-ish. So around 6-7 hours in my teens.
And when did you, was there a light bulb moment for you where you thought, hang on, this is getting out of hand?
It was kind of gradual. When I moved to university, I realized this is not going to work anymore. But it wasn't until I broke up with my girlfriend because of gaming in part, which I realized, like, okay, I need to work on this. I need to change something in my life.
And how did you discover support to help you do that?
I just Googled, like, stop gaming, how to stop gaming. And I found out the website Reddit, it had a subreddit for Stop Gaming. And I think there I discovered Game Quitters and Cam's work.
And what would you say the key was now, if you were going to give advice to somebody else who might be in that position?
I want to repeat what Cam said before. The community aspect was very, very important for me. Just finding new friends, finding new hobbies. Because one of the reasons I was gaming so much is because I was feeling lonely and without friends in a new country. And once I made those friends, you know, those feelings would go away and I would, you know, don't feel the urges to play games as much anymore. So really finding the community, finding friends which you can do stuff not on the computer, but actually in the real life. That was the key thing for me.
See, interestingly, John Logan, that's a common thread, isn't it, with Matouche and Cam, that they both were finding solace from an online world.
Absolutely. And in common with all addictions, all addicts find solace in whatever it is they're actually doing. It's an escape. Usually underlying an addiction, there are other mental health issues.
Mm. Giovanna joins us next, lives here in the UK, originally from South Africa. And it's your son, Giovanna, that we're going to talk about, isn't it? Your 28-year-old. How long has he struggled with gaming addiction for?
Good evening, Phil. He's very, very similar to Cam Adair. He started from 6 years old with TV games. He's now 28, nearly 29. And yes, it's been from TV games to computer games, video games, computer games, all sorts. And he still is struggling every day.
And is it true that you're so concerned you moved here to assist him?
Not exactly. I had actually asked him to move to the UK to get out of the environment that he was in South Africa, just to start a new life. He came to the UK first, and 6 months later I came over. He was doing very well here in the UK, and it was when his brother had actually moved over about 6 months after I had moved over that things went downhill again. And he sort of got addicted all over again, both of them started playing computers or gaming. And his younger brother, Andrea, he got himself a job and got onto his feet and started working. But Marco, the older one, he didn't. He went downhill. He just carried on playing computers, and he lost his job. He was kicked out of his flat. Because I lived in Oxford at that time, I drove through from Oxford one night very late through to London and came to talk to him, to tell him, you know, we can't carry on like this because we have been in this situation before. But that was 4 years ago. And it's been, like Cam says, it's been, he's come and gone out of the same, it's sort of been like a routine, not a routine, he's out of it, then he's in again, and then he's out of it, and then he's in again, and he loses his jobs, and he also was playing 16 hours a day, every day. Same story. He did do the showering and everything, but he never ate. He was losing so much weight. He looked sick. He lost all his friends. He didn't want to go out. He didn't want to socialize. He just wanted to play games. And at one point, I offered him a job to come work for me in Oxford, which he did do. And he worked there for a year, but even in that year, I had to ask him to leave because he was every morning he came to work late because he was gaming through the night and he couldn't get up early enough to come to work.
Can I put to you a text message that we've had from a listener whilst you've been talking to us, Giovanna, and just get a reaction? James, it's actually a tweet, sorry, not a text. James says, I feel this is not something that parents can complain about. They are the ones who let their kids play these games for hours on end as an easy childcare method. It only becomes an addiction whenever they can't stop it, not whenever they have something else to do. What's your view on that?
Well, as I said before as well, I've spoken about when my son played computer games, and you know, you'd see him, I'm talking now when he was much younger, he'd enjoy himself and he'd have friends around, and but when I did not actually know it was an addiction, the only time that I really knew it was an addiction, my story is quite long, but I mean, I sent him back to South Africa after he came to work for me in Oxford, just to sort of reconnect with his friends, reconnect with the country, get some sun. You know, I just thought he would change, but it didn't happen. He fell in the same routine and came back again. And when he came back to the UK again, that's when I really started Googling to find out, is this a problem? You know, is it actually a problem? Is gaming a problem, or is there other people out there? And that's when I came across, I came across a few places, but Cam Adair's story stood out. Then I realized my son is addicted. I didn't realize you can get addicted to games. I mean, really, I thought my son was just a naughty child, and he, you know, he did things his way, and he became also very aggressive at times. And I really did not know this was an addiction until I came across Cam's story. And he's, except for the suicide note, his story is so similar to my son's. And there were times that I felt that my son was in a place where he could commit suicide, where I got my other son involved, and I asked him to please make sure that he's not doing certain things, or he's not is in a dark place. Just talk to him all the time.
And let me bring Robert Teague in, Giovanna, because Robert's a headmaster of the Cedar School, which is a boys' school in Croydon. And I know your school has invited Cam to give a talk, haven't you, to your pupils? But just pick up on some of the things that Giovanna was talking about, and the concerns that you have as a head teacher, and how you advise parents to limit game time for your students.
Sure, yeah. I think parents are absolutely key. And certainly, I think clear boundaries are very important. So we do encourage parents to put those in place. Not to allow any kind of binge gaming. I think the whole area of self-control is also important. That's not something that can happen overnight, but it's a question really of teaching young people to control the technology so it doesn't control them. And I think also, and one of your guests mentioned this earlier, but the importance of providing positive alternatives, whether sport, music, or other outdoor activities, and preferably with some degree of social interaction. And I think, rather counterintuitively, I think it's important to create opportunities for young people to add value to the lives of others. I suppose what you might call a spirit of service. And that can be a very effective bulwark against some of these things, and give them a sense of meaning and purpose. And I suppose certainly with our parents, I think it's very important that they're aware quite how addictive these games can be. Mm. You know, they're designed to make people want to keep playing them.
And, yeah, of course.
And that's, yeah.
But let me ask you this. See, I remember when, you know, I'm of the generation of the Spectrums and the Commodores and all those, right? And I remember that on school holidays, if we'd been in our, I say we, me and my brother, if we'd been in our bedroom too long playing games, Mum would come up and tell us to stop playing, right? But that's easier to do in the summer when you've got other things, you know, that are attractive. But now, you know, it's dark by us at 3:30 today. It's been throwing down all day. You don't want to go out.
Yeah. No, it is a challenge. And I think children go out far less than they used to when we were young. But I think that though it's a challenge, it's not insuperable, and I think that those boundaries are the first thing. There may be some difficult battles to fight, but maintaining those boundaries is absolutely essential. And then when they're in place, young people will find other things to do.
How difficult is it for you and your staff to limit access to smartphones and screens during school time?
Well, the rule that we have, which works very well. We actually tried a few things, but we've settled on something which we're very happy with. So we have a rule that we're a boys' school. The boys can bring a phone to school, keep it in their blazer pocket, switched off, as long as it's a brick. Now, our parents are very happy with this because when our 11-year-olds join the school, we've already had an induction session with parents. And so they know that the other boys are going to have bricks. And so when it comes to that peer pressure moment and children are saying, oh, you know, you must buy me a smartphone because everybody will laugh at me because everybody else will have a smartphone. They know that isn't the case. And now some of our boys, I'm sure, do have smartphones, but we don't tend to see them at school. And many of them own bricks and don't own smartphones until they're older, which I think personally is a very good idea.
Cam, let's get a closing thought from you. I know you're going to go to Robert's school, aren't you, and talk to the students. What do you think we need to be doing as a society to, A, support people who are already addicted, but to actually prevent the addiction in the first place?
improving the conversation around this topic is essential. And so prevention, having talks, having more information, parents having education around the subject is very important. I also believe that when it comes to parents, on one hand, yes, parents need to be empowered to set better restrictions and limit access and find alternative activities. You know, for decades before technology was around, families managed to get through the London winter no problem. And so I think just remembering that is important. But at the same time, we have to be very cautious of blaming and shaming parents for being in this situation. These are very challenging experiences that they're having. And in many cases, most gaming addicts are 18 to 24, 25 years old. So it actually happens when parents are no longer around, when they don't have supervision any longer. So just being very mindful of not blaming parents for this situation and holding tech companies accountable, because tech companies are ultimately the ones who are designing these games to be as engaging as possible and integrating, you know, certain gambling-like game design like loot boxes and in-app purchases that are targeted towards kids very young. And we need to be able to build more awareness around this. It's something I'm very passionate about doing, speaking at, you know, across the UK and across the world. But at the same time, you know, just empowering people to know that this is a real addiction, this is a real problem, and there is help available, whether it's on gamequitters.com or centers like The Cabin in Thailand, there is help available.
Gamequitters.com is Cam's site. Cam Adair, who now offers an online support network to gaming addicts. And Cam, come and speak to us on 5 Live when you're in the UK. Yeah, when you go to visit Robert's school, come and see us and we'll have a further chat about this. That's Cam Adair, who at the height of his addiction was playing for up to 16 hours a day. Thanks to John Logan, head counsellor at The Cabin, which is a residential treatment centre in Thailand, to Matish Tikas, who's a student who became addicted to gaming in his teens, Giovanna, who is still concerned about her son and his gaming, and Robert Teague, headmaster of the Cedars School, which is an all-boys school in Croydon, 11:33.
On digital, BBC Sounds, smart speaker, and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.